From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
The 8th career round over 1100 for Ricky Wysocki and the 3rd straight win for Katrina Allen are the big news coming out of the Utah Open this weekend, and that's where you're going to spend most of today on PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, and I'm joined by Sarah Lamberson. Sarah, what else do we have on the agenda for this episode?
We have got a pretty exciting show for you this week. Katrina Allen, the winner of the Utah Open, we will be talking to her a little bit later in the show. We're also going to be talking more of the European tournaments that are coming up.
Summertime trip to Europe.
Yep.
Except vicariously, because we won't actually be there.
Yes. And we'll be spending the bulk of the show talking about the latest Utah Open.
Yeah. On a totally unrelated note, like Europe-wise, I'm really excited because as we get towards summer, that means the Tour de France is coming. And for people who don't know me, you will hear some Tour de France stuff during that event because I'm a super, super nerd for that one. So
cool.
I'm looking forward to that one. But yeah, let's talk Utah because, geez, like some serious scoring yesterday. Well, I guess by the time you're listening to this, Sunday, for the final round of the Utah Open, Ricky Wysocki shoots an 11.05 rated 14 under par 44. Course record, blowing everyone out of the water. But here's the crazy part. Eagle Command and Paul McBeth both shoot 1087, and they still can't win. Like, that's incredible to me.
He just had a flow going. Like, you could tell watching the live coverage that he was just like, yep, I'm on my game. Nothing can stop me. He was just making every putt. He was just in the zone. Anybody could do.
And he definitely made a couple big putts, but like he also was just parking everything.
Yeah.
It was either parking everything or huge, but like there was no in between for him. And I think it was really interesting to see because we haven't really seen this Ricky Wysocki in a while. Like we've seen this over the past couple years, but this season he hasn't had that same dominant streak. We've talked a bunch about Eagle and we've talked about Paul and we've talked about Ricky, but it's been kind of this cycle between the three of them. Mm-hmm. And Ricky just kind of got back to, okay, I'm the two-time world champion game this weekend.
Yeah, he had total command over the course. And, I mean, Eagle was playing super hot, too, clearly, shooting a 1087. But Ricky was just untouchable. He was unstoppable.
Yeah,
exciting to watch.
It's interesting. Like, we're in this really interesting region of golf right now in that, you know, for the last couple of years, it was just Ricky and Paul we were talking about, and someone would sneak in occasionally. But now, it's a top three, and I don't think there's any real debating that anymore, that it's now Ricky, Paul, and Eagle. Do you agree or disagree with that, Sarah?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's kind of up for grabs. But, of course, we're seeing a lot of new faces on some of the lead cards. It was really exciting to see Austin Hannum. It was the first time I'd seen him play. Yeah. And then Lewis Bitney was a really exciting addition to the lead card.
Yeah, he's got a lot of personality.
Oh, yeah. He was really fun to watch. But, yeah, I think the three of them are really duking it out at the top right now.
Yeah.
So it's pretty exciting.
And, you know, talking to Ricky afterwards, I think the funniest part about it was he was just like, yeah, it's not bad. Like, he was just, I mean, he was just being kind of casual. Like, he was joking around. But, like,
yeah.
I mean, and it's
That's
just
nice, though.
Yeah, I mean he's usually pretty chill. I mean he's one of those guys who he kind of like he'll get mad at himself when he shanks a shot, but like after a round that he's won, he's fairly humble. Like, but at the same time, he's also confident in his game. He basically said at the end, he's like, "This gives me a big confidence boost that like I can go out against these two guys, and not only did I win the tournament, but I won the round against them."
Yeah.
And so, like, when my game is on, I'm the best. Essentially, is kind of what he was saying, and. I mean, you can agree or disagree with that. This weekend, that was the story. He was on, and he was the best. So it was quite exciting to watch the coverage. You know, we had the live stuff from Smashbox. I think the Central Coast Disc Golf stuff is all out by now. Sarah, did you see that they, like, pulled up the MPO lead card in an Escalade or something up to T1 yesterday?
I did.
What was that all about?
I don't know. I don't know who was driving, if that was like the mayor or something.
It's gotta be some, like sponsor. It's gotta be a sponsor with the event, I would think.
Possibly. It was really cool.
It's not a bad idea. I think and the other thing that really kind of stuck out to me this weekend, Sarah, was the difference between rounds two, well, I mean, I shouldn't even say between two and three, but how round two was just this giant anomaly, it seemed, among the scoring. The wind was really up, and that's when that course there, the Mulligan's Golf Course, really kind of showed its teeth. And like, you had Macbeth going over par. I think he shot low enough. I think he shot a low enough rating that it'll be dropped from his overall player rating.
I don't
It's
know.
gonna be close.
It was 973.
I think that'll get. I think anything below, almost anything below 1,000 for him is gonna get dropped
Maybe, yeah.
these days with
Yeah,
his
it was
consistency.
pain. That round was painful to watch. The wind was just so, it was so scary. And there was a lot of multiple putting attempts. So yeah, that was a tough round to watch for everybody. But there's some people that shred. I mean, Austin Hannum shot a 52, 1042 rated. There are some people that
Yeah,
were really able
Eagle
to
shot
read the
minus
wind.
seven. I mean, it's
Right.
so interesting to see who can kind of sustain that and figure, Grady Shue five down. Like
Yeah.
there's people shot really well, but then the people who you expect to shoot really well just kind of went in the tank. I mean, even Ricky only shot a 200 par, and he's like, yeah, I really wanted to come back and just get revenge on that round.
Yeah, it seems like they maybe didn't adjust their game plan for the wind. They were just like, well, this is what I always throw in this hole, so I'm going to keep throwing this, and didn't really consider the wind, and that was kind of their downfall.
I don't know. I think
I don't
too
know.
when the wind is up there, I think, maybe the brakes come into play a little bit more. I think you've got more of a propensity for those, maybe those spots where like it was an inch or two off when it's calm. You know what I mean? Kind of just
Yeah.
gets exacerbated in the wind. You had Macbeth going into bunkers more than he did the first round. I mean, I was thinking about it, and I wrote in my like round one recap article after I talked to him that it was pretty much like he putted really well in round one, and the only thing he needed to clean up in round two was the OBs. I think he'd gone
Yeah.
OB three times in the first round. And then he comes out in round two, putts 81%, which is bad for him, and goes OB seven times. So
Yeah.
complete opposite of what really needed to be done. But then there he is still at the end, in striking distance out of the end. So just
Yeah.
a really odd tournament, like kind of a funky
There's just
little sandwich tournament.
Yeah, there's just so much danger on this course. I mean, the course map, if you just look at the course map, does not do it justice. There's OB on every single hole. There's water all over the place. There's luckily, I think they said something like last year the cart paths played out of bounds and this year they were safe. And that was some feedback that they got from players and they were very happy for
Okay.
that change. I would be too because there's obviously cart paths all over the dang place,
I mean,
but
I
there's
wouldn't
so
even
much
be,
danger.
yeah,
Like, it's just so scary.
I wouldn't feel comfortable running like more than three putts out there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
there are ponds and bunkers and hills and stuff, and it's just everything is so nasty out there. It's kind of, but I think that's kind of what you have to do on a ball golf course is you
Yep.
have to bring in the danger in another way. So,
Yeah.
interesting stuff on the men's side, and we're gonna do what we did last week, is we're gonna give three things for each division. But Sarah, what was the biggest, what did you take as the biggest thing out of the FPO division? Obviously, Kat now has three in a row.
Yeah.
What did you see from her on the way to that victory for her?
Well, so reading your article, and then I saw a little, some of the little video snippets with her, and she was like, I'm gonna stop running for things. If I don't feel confident, I'm just gonna lay it up and not even put that mental burden on myself. Just lay it up and take my three. And she was like, if birdies come, they'll come, but I'm playing for par. And that obviously worked out very well in her favor. She was really on. Her drives were really looking good. Her putting was looking very confident, compared to earlier this year. She went out of bounds. Let's see. I'm looking.
I think she was right around. I don't know. I know Paige
It
Bierkus had the
was,
fewest OBs, but it
yeah.
certainly
Her
wasn't a
OB rate
lot.
was, yeah.
Well, she went
Her
five
OB rate
times in
was
the
only
final round.
second.
Oh,
So she
second
was,
round,
she went,
sorry.
yeah. So it wasn't too bad. Circle one putts 84%, and that may be due in part to the fact that she was laying up. She said something, I think, in one of your articles that was like, even if my toe was like touching the circle one line, that didn't even mean that I was going for it. Like, I would still lay up in the circle. And that's due to the fact that there is a lot of very tricky greens out there with water and bunkers and all sorts of stuff. So,
yeah. And
I don't know.
It's interesting. Sarah, as a player yourself, like, how difficult is it to suppress that instinct to want to go for it? I mean, you're out there, you're competing, you want to go for it, you want to score. So how, like, how much do you think Katrina, like, put yourself in her shoes, how much is she really having to battle her better competitive drive there to do that?
Well, I am a super safe, boring player. So for me, I don't think it would be very difficult. For her, she's very competitive, but she is a really smart player. I don't feel like I've typically seen her go for things that she shouldn't go for and then, you know, take high numbers. But it seemed like she kind of took the decision out of her brain. It was just like, if there is danger, just lay it up. She didn't kind of flounder back and forth with like, oh, should I go for it? You know, she didn't make her decisions based on what anyone else was doing or where anyone else was on the leaderboard. She was just like, if it's dangerous, I'm not going for it. My decision is made before I even consider it. So I think that was really smart. It probably took a good bit of self-control, of course, but it really worked for her. We'll see if the plan continues to work. I hope it does in her upcoming events.
Looking at her UDisc stats, obviously, yes, she was laying up putting, but she was able to do that because she was accurate in other spots. I mean, she was in circle two in regulation 41% of her shots. I mean, that's first place. She was first in fairway hits percentage, first in scrambling, which that makes sense. If she wasn't actively trying for birdies, she's going to lead in scrambles.
Yeah.
Just a really interesting game plan. I wonder long term. Yeah, like you said, like, I wonder how sustainable that is, because the one thing you have to kind of remember is there was no Paige Pierce at this event. There was no Sarah Hokum at this event. So there was a little less, and that's no knock on any of the other competitors at this event, but those are the other top two women's players who compete with Katrina Allen week in and week out. And so it'll be interesting to see when they're all back together if she still has that luxury. You know, I think she still did that in some ways at Beaver State when she won. So who knows? Maybe it'll end up working for her.
Yeah, I hope it does.
So
I'm glad to see her back on top.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm glad we actually finally got a hold of her. We've been trying to get her since Beaver State, and she's going to tell you about what happened to her phone. Let's do this. Let's just play our interview with Katrina. I will warn listeners, she was driving, so there's some, background noise and a couple little shaky spots. So I apologize for that in advance, but we had a good talk. So we're going to play that now, and then Sarah will come back and go a little deeper into Utah Opens. That sound good?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll be back here on PGA Radio with Katrina Allen in just a moment. All right, welcome back to the show, and joining us now is the winner of the Utah Open, and before that, the Beaver State Fling, and before that, the Battle of Seattle, Katrina Allen. Katrina, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
No problem. I know we've been actually trying to have this, we've been trying to get this together for a couple weeks, so before we talk about Utah, I actually need to know the story of how you lost your phone after Beaver State Fling.
It's kind of silly because I even put my phone in like a plastic bag, and then it was in my little Mickey Mouse fanny pack you probably see me wear when I'm out following.
I have not, but I need to pay more attention now.
And then Austin and I were going to go tubing, and then we bought cheap tubes. So those didn't work out for us, but we found a cool little spot. We camped at Milo for the week and walked down there with our tubes. They didn't work out, but there was like this big rock in the middle of the Clackamas, and we're like, let's get out there. And so when we were on our little like trek across the Clackamas to get out to this big rock, my fanny pack was unzipped, and I was taking like my first step down to like get in the river, and it was flowing pretty hard. and my purse was open, and or my fanny pack was open, and my phone fell, but it just kind of was hanging out on the bottom, and of course it's clear so you can see. And Austin went to grab it, slipped on a rock and fell. And so I looked at him, and then we both looked, and then the phone was on its way, like it was gone.
My goodness. That's got to be, I mean, that's basically your lifeline when you're out on tour.
It was kind of a blessing in disguise to have a week off and have no phone, though.
Just kind of disconnect from everything?
Yeah, and I remember saying, like, oh, no, I littered. Like, I was more mad that, like, I'm like, oh, well, it's a phone. I can replace it. It's not that big a deal. I just hope I get my pictures back is all I was hoping.
Yeah, there you go. I have to ask, are you trying to bring the fanny pack back, or did it never go out of style?
I think it's back. Like, I was just in Nordstrom, actually, and there was a fanny pack purse. Like, a really fancy, like, high-end name brand, like designer purse as a fanny pack. And I didn't buy it, but I was interested.
you considered it?
Yeah.
I'm curious if we could, like, bring that onto the disc golf course at all. Like, probably pretty difficult to throw with a fanny pack on, though.
Okay, well, the Memorial, I think it was, used to give out a fanny pack, like a disc craft fanny pack, I think.
That's great.
And Dan Ginley, who, like, helps run or has ran the Memorial, who's from Arizona, he obviously was a great player and played. And so everybody calls it the Danny Pack. So it exists. There's
That's
a
awesome.
Disc golf fanny pack, but we call it the Danny Pack because Dan Ginley wears it and will kick in it because he's a great player.
I think you should bring that. That feels like something you could pull off pretty well in Europe. So maybe do that for contest day.
Okay.
That'd be a good one. All right. Now that we've spent a good portion of the interview on this week's portion of Fashion Talk, I let's talk about Utah. You know, third straight win, and you and I have had a chance to talk quite a bit over the last few weeks and all this stuff. But for people who aren't us. You know, you kind of told me one of the biggest kind of turning points for you almost was kind of around San Francisco, right? When you just kind of made some decisions about your putting and your approach in general to the game. So how has that been going for you since then?
Good. I think the Beaver State Fling first round, which unfortunately isn't on film, and I don't think we have live scoring, if I remember right. So there's no stats or anything like that, but that was by far my best putting round of, oh gosh, in a minute. I think I made a couple outside the circle and a lot of good ones, like just inside the circle to like save three or for birdie. So, the first round I actually wasn't like executing my tee shots as well as I'd like to. So I was scrambling a little bit and yeah. So I feel like that really paid off. And then this week, if anybody's watched the film or been to Utah, almost every basket is either on a mound, has water behind it. Of course, the Disc Golf Pro Tour puts them on
the elevated pins. Yeah. did you say the trash cans? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like when you hit it.
Sure. Sure.
The last putt of the turn, I don't even, it was definitely one of the putts, like the distance where I might even, you've maybe seen me putt with my bag on or something, like pretty close. The farthest it could have been was 20 feet. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to lay this under the pole because I have a 4-stroke lead and lay it up.
And that was this weekend. You cut out for a minute there. I apologize.
Okay. This weekend for the win, I had a, like a 20 footer for birdie to win by four, and I just laid it up. So
what's been, where has it been for you? Like, why was it easy, or maybe it wasn't easy, but what made it to where you could make that switch and just say, you know what, I don't have to go for this? Like, where did you finally come to that breaking point in your mental game?
I think it was kind of like when I looked back at rounds, like, especially even Vegas. Like, even if I went back as far as Vegas, where I was still putting pretty decent, making some good ones, and, you know, it wasn't the best, but I was like, I think I three putted once every round and maybe one round twice. And it was like, okay, if I would have just laid up at the end there, I could have, you know, and of course that's hearsay, but I could have possibly just been able to par out and win, you know? So, I felt like I was trying to do too much, and, I'm not Ricky Wysocki. I don't make it in the heart every time from 50 feet. So maybe someday, but, I think my strongest suit has always been, my driving and my ability to scramble. So I feel like unless it's, you know, maybe for the win or there's no trouble, there's why, you know, I might as well just play golf and let the birdies come when they come.
Now, did that kind of, I mean, how much did the struggles with putting, you know, did that kind of bleed into other parts of your game? Did it sap your confidence everywhere, or were you able to keep it to just on the putting green?
At first, it was definitely just on the putting green, but then it gets kind of stressful if you're not, like, you know, like I said, I've always been able to rely on my driving, I feel like, and then when the driving's not going so well, it used to feel like when the driving wasn't going so well, for some reason, my putt would show up out of nowhere, and then now it was like, okay, well, I don't have a putt to rely on, so now what the heck do I do? You know?
Yeah,
so,
oh yeah.
Which
yeah.
Causes all kinds of, you know, thoughts and anxiety, and then you start thinking all the wrong thoughts on the course, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, for instance, at San Francisco Open, I had a putt on the last hole. I think we've talked about this, but I guess if I would have made it, I would have beat Paige by a stroke, which would have only made me, I think, like $75 more. So that isn't that big a deal. But I just felt like I played a good round, and I got up to that putt, and I felt the same feelings I had felt when I had, like, the yips or the putting struggles. And I told myself, I feel like that right there was what kind of really brought all the confidence. Is like, I didn't care that everyone else would have gone for it or whatever. I listened to myself and just left the tournament with a good, you know, a good round and a good finish to the weekend.
Now, going back to Utah a little bit, I'm curious for your take on this. You know, not a lot, and you kind of mentioned it. No one was really scoring. We talked about this yesterday. No one was really scoring. You could just kind of let the birdies come when they did, but really play for par.
Yeah.
We're kind of discussing this on the podcast today, but what's your take? Like, do birdies matter in the women's division? Does it make a difference when you're not seeing a bunch of blue numbers on the scorecard? Or really, so, if you're just playing your game, does it really make that much of a difference?
No, this is actually something I talked about with Steve Dodge and something I've kind of been saying for years. And actually, the example I always use is like Fountain Hills, maybe hole one. I see a lot of women try to throw a really aggressive drive to make sure to get a three when a nice safe shot, an upshot, and then maybe a good putt. And if not, taking the four is actually, you're not losing that many strokes. You're maybe losing one. And then I think maybe every once in a while you would lose two strokes, but it's a really hard hole. And so I really liked what San Francisco did with the women's, where we still played a lot of the same tees, and instead of it being a par four, it was maybe a par five.
Sure.
Or instead of a par three, it was a par four. And I think, I guarantee if that would have changed at the Utah Open, it would have, you know, I think it would have helped.
Is there just
confidence or something?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is there a confidence boost that comes from seeing that you're stringing together some birdies instead of some pars, maybe?
Exactly. And I think, I kind of figured that out in the round that, like, you know, pars are good because these are hard holes even for the MPO division. So, you know, if you get a look and there's no danger, maybe go for it. But if not, pars are good out here as to their course par. You know, I think, like, hole nine is a really hard par four, but it's a really good par five for us, in my opinion.
Sure.
You have to, if you want to get to a really good spot, you have to carry pretty far. I think you would have to throw over 350 to carry it all, but there's a good strip of land where you can throw like sidearm or maybe a mid-range and then attack from there. And I like that. I think that calls for golf. So if we call it a par five, then I still think it's a good hole. If you have the distance, you can, you know, go for it. There's OB right. There's like some bunkers and greens to the left and you're carrying water. So even though you have the distance, it's still not an easy shot. And then also the layup is still demanding. And I like that. I think that's okay. But yeah, just call it what it is. I think my group was even talking about that as the week went on, you know, like, I think this would maybe be a par four for our division and right. A three's good, you know, like good. We all three to hole. And I was like, I think that's really good. You know, like, I don't think we should be like, oh, all pars, you know, like, I think that was a good hole. Everyone executed it as well as we could have, yeah. You know, without getting in trouble. So.
All right. One more.
Because.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Okay. No, you're fine.
Oh, no, I was just going to say because I think that was what was getting me in trouble at first was like, oh, I can get a look on this hole. And it's like, but for what? So I can bogey, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. So.
All right. I'll let you go in just a minute because I know you are traveling, but that's kind of what I wanted to ask you about. You're about to head over to Europe, right? And mm-hmm. Are you doing an extended run there or are you going back and forth a couple times? What's your plan? And then, I mean, I guess on a bigger scheme, like taking three wins with you into Europe, how does that, you know, what's the outlook for you for the rest of the season, do you think?
So yeah, I'm playing, the Tunney Open, the Scandinavian Open, and then Kona Pista, the first major of the year. And yeah, no, like I said, I'm just trying to build off the confidence each week, feel a little, more comfortable on the course, a little more confident in my shot selection and making it easier and easier to trust my game plan and execute shots. So I think it feels good to not be stressed and have the worry of the yips and all those things that were going on. So I think I'm just excited to play again as opposed to like the stress of what was going to happen, you know. So I think that's helping me play well.
And on a final note, how much Finnish do you speak these days?
A good amount.
A good amount.
I could order my food when I go to dinner if everyone didn't speak such good English over there.
So what does one eat for, like, I don't know, what do you eat when you go to Finland? Is there something there? Is it just, I have no idea. Educate me, please.
What I am looking for, I mean, food is amazing over there. One of my favorite things is like they have a lot of like meat, veggies, and potatoes, but then everything comes with some kind of delicious sauce, like a béarnaise or like a gravy of some sort or like a chipotle. Oh my gosh, that is what I look forward to. But I'm staying with Timo Nissinen's family, and his dad will cook. His dad and his mom, and then his dad makes homemade crepes on the grill out back, and that is what I cannot wait for. So,
well, in that case, I'm gonna go eat a snack because you're making me hungry, and I'm gonna let you get back on the road. But thank you for taking some time out to join us, and good luck overseas.
Okay, thank you, Steve.
All right, thanks, Katrina. That was Katrina Allen, and we'll be back here in just a minute on PDGA Radio. All right, always good to have more players on the show. Thanks to Katrina for taking some time. It's always difficult when everyone's on the road, so appreciate her time. And Sarah, you've got some more observations from the women's division. So what were the other three big things that you really saw out of the event this weekend?
So I was happy to see Paige Bjerkus in another big event. She's on that mini tour from school. She's on summer break.
Yep.
And her hair game is on point. I'm a little bit jealous.
There's one photo of her. If you look at like the Disc Golf Pro Tour's Flickr account that Alyssa mm-hmm. Van Landen took, and it's like she's driving and her hair is if you didn't know it was Paige Bjerkus, you wouldn't know because her hair is literally covering her face. It's very much an action shot.
I can't imagine playing with my hair. I mean, my hair is like 2 feet shorter than hers. But I can't imagine playing like that. She does it well. She makes it look good at the same time. But so I was very, very happily pleased with her playing. I mean, she came in. I'm not sure what kind of expectations she has, because, you know, she's been focusing on school for the past year. She hasn't been playing a whole lot of big events. So this is kind of just the beginning of her mini tour. But she killed it. And she did so just by playing really consistently. She had the lowest OB rate. She was second in fairway hits, 48%. She had 87% circle putts. Circle one putts.
For circle one, yeah.
Yeah, and that seems like a pretty good percentage to me, but she was seventh in the field, so not too high there. She was third in birdies because she... I think we talked about this last week. She can bomb. So she was in some really good positions, but she wasn't getting greedy. And on, I think it was yesterday's coverage, Sunday's coverage, she was commentating and kind of going through her thought process on every hole. And she was just like, yeah, I play for my three. I'm not getting greedy. I know if I'm going to miss left, for instance, so that you're not putting the water or this particular bunker in play. So she was just, it seemed like she was very thoughtful about her placement on every hole. And that's really commendable as a young player.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. I mean, she's not out there on tour every week. I mean, she's played in this field for a while though. I mean, we haven't seen her as much this year, but she's not lacking experience,
right?
But I think it's to have that mentality to come out and know that, hey, okay, I've got to play conservative if I want to perform well. Mm-hmm. It's not always easy to do.
Yeah. So that was really cool to see. Her putting wasn't as strong during the third round. Like, she put herself in a lot of places where she had a putt and unfortunately missed it. And I feel like if she had made all of those putts, she could have... I mean, she was only three back of Kat. I feel like she could have won if she just kind of cleans up her putting a little bit.
Yeah,
so I'm hoping she gets that a little bit stronger throughout her tour and we can see her high up on the leaderboard.
Yeah, I think she'll be hitting the Majestic right after this and then the Great Lakes Open before heading back home to Emporia. So
cool.
We'll see her make a little more noise. Now, kind of in contrast between that with, you know, Paige tied for second with Jessica Weiss. Talk about taking two completely different routes to get to second place, Sarah.
Yeah. So Jessica Weiss and Paige tied for second. And so as we were talking about, Paige just kept it really consistent. She took a lot of pars. She 67% pars, 6% birdies, and 28% bogeys. So, you know, 2/3 of her holes were pars, and that's pretty consistent. Jessica Weiss, on the other hand, if you look at her scorecards for the three rounds, it's more of a roller coaster. She racked up more birdies, 22%, but she also racked up more bogeys at 33%, and she had a couple bigger numbers. She had 6% double bogey, whereas Paige Bjerkus did not take anything above a bogey. So it's a little bit more of a roller coaster.
A lot of OBs for her. She had 11. Yeah. She had 11 OBs. I mean, so you take that off of her, you know, let's say every OB turns a birdie into at least a par. That's
right.
11 shots right there that were just erased.
Yep, exactly. So I don't know. I was very impressed by Jessica Weiss's bombing skills as well. Hole 17 is 375 feet. It looks pretty flat. And then at the behind the basket, just all water, and it's an elevated basket. And she parked it with a forehand, 375 feet flat.
That's great.
So I was very impressed by that. It'll be interesting. I mean, normally we've seen this season Weiss and Lisa Fakus doing a lot of battling, and I'm excited to throw Paige Bjerkus in the mix as well.
I know. I hope we get to see her a little more after her. Maybe she'll go out for, I don't know, though. I think she's got school again, so the D-Glo might be the last chance we see her this year. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Sarah, last thing on our list of, like, three things from the FPO division, and I asked Katrina this, too, but one of the interesting parts about looking at this event on the women's side is there's a lot of white numbers there are a lot of orange numbers. There are not a lot of blue numbers, and by that I mean not a lot of birdies. Mm-hmm. I think the first round there were only 14 birdies in the entire 14-player field. I didn't go back and check through the rest of them, but my question is, does it matter if we're having a bunch of birdies in the women's division to you, or, you know, is it just you score what you score?
Do you mean on this course in particular, or
I mean just in general? I mean, on this course, I don't know. Give me both. I mean, do you think there needed to be adjustments made? Do you think there could have been more birdies on this course, or is it just a function of this course having so much teeth?
Yeah, I mean, there were some holes. What was it? 817 foot par four, I believe.
819 hole nine. 819, yeah.
Oh, it's 2 feet off. That arguably could be a par five, but I'm pretty sure Kat birdied that.
She got a five and a par. She got a par. No, she parred it.
Oh, she parred it.
Parred
okay.
It twice and.
Well, I guess that's five. My point. It seemed like a birdie.
Yes.
when she parred it, it seemed like a birdie. So I think we talked about this. Was it San Francisco Open where a lot of the women's holes were the same as the men's, but they just
extended the par.
Yeah, bumped the par up by one. I think I said this during that episode as well. I don't think that really matters because shots are shots. Par doesn't really matter except for when you see the red and you're in the negative on the PDGA event page. That's always exciting.
Well, and that's so, I'll let people know we recorded the interview with Katrina and you didn't even get to hear all of it yet, but she actually brought that up as well. And she mentioned that she actually liked that in that, you know, she kind of likes being able to score some birdies because it can boost your confidence a little bit. If you're looking at the scores and your numbers going under instead of over, maybe that plays into your mentality a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, a birdie always feels good.
Sure.
But I think it's more, I think you just need to more so compare to your card mates and your division. And if like you take a two on a hole that everyone else is taking a three on and you had a really good drive and a really good putt and they kind of squandered the opportunity, then that, I don't know, that feels good to me as well, knowing that I played the hole really cleanly.
Just that you played it better.
That was a bad example because of course nothing below a par three. So if I took a three on a hole and shot super clean and got to the basket in three and everyone else took a four or five, then I would feel pretty good about that. I don't know. I don't think numbers really matter to me all that much.
Okay. I think the other thing to remember from this tournament is that human birdie machine Paige Pierce was not there.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, honestly, that makes a difference. Like she generally racks up more birdies in this division. So I'd be curious. We didn't really have, I think she only played one round at this tournament last year. This was one where she had to leave. She had a family emergency. So mm-hmm. We really haven't seen what Paige Pierce would do on this course.
Yeah.
So that could change the conversation. I was just, you know, it was something that stood out. But you know, I remember even at Beaver State, there weren't a lot of birdies to come by too. It was just kind of the composition of the course. So
yeah,
it's a discussion to keep having.
Yeah. Looking at your question in a different way though. So we see Kat won this event at plus eight. She obviously did not shoot under par, but if she had shot, I guess what I'm saying is she didn't need to shoot a bunch of birdies in order to win. If she just
and
had
she
shot,
said as much. Yeah.
Yeah. If she had just shot par on every single hole and didn't go OB, she would have been the clear winner by 11 strokes. So birdies, getting the disc close to the basket on your drive and getting a birdie on this course was not as important as just staying really clean and staying out of the danger.
All right. So jumping back to the open division, a few things stood out there beyond obviously the great play at the top of the division. Sarah, I've been really impressed with Austin Hannum. I know you mentioned him a little bit already in the show. He is definitely, he wasn't someone who I was expecting us to be really talking about making a lot of noise this season, but it seems like almost every tournament lately, he's at least jumping on a lead card or shooting near a hot round, making moves up and down the standings. You know, he was on feature card the first round, this tournament, worked his way up to the lead card for the final round. He seems, and here's the thing, and I think you watched enough to kind of get a gauge too, but give me your read on this. Like, he doesn't seem like the flashiest player on the planet. Like, he's just pretty accurate. He seems like a very workmanlike player. Would that be a good descriptor, or do you have a better, what was your take on watching him play this weekend?
Yeah, he just seemed really, really stable. It's so hard to tell on the camera, like, how far someone is throwing. He was throwing far enough, I would say.
Right.
Like, he wasn't throwing Drew Gibson or Simon Lazat far. Well, Simon wasn't there, but you know what I mean?
Sure.
But he was throwing far enough to keep himself in the mix. And yeah, he just seemed really consistent. He was playing some of those fast greens really smartly, staying out of OB. And I was really impressed with him too. I hadn't really followed him at all up until this point. So it looks like his best finish at a disc golf pro tour event.
I think he was in that big log jam for fifth place at Masters Cup. Yeah, and he played, pretty well on the Daylog golf course there. So something about placement accuracy shots really works for this game. And this is his first full season on tour, so like, we don't really have a good gauge for how he's going to play in the woods or more of those ones later this year. So I'm just excited to keep an eye on him. Again, it's just this whole like new infusion of talent.
Yeah.
On the men's side. Speaking of an infusion of talent, we've known about Anthony Barella for a few years now. He used to be like the mini Macbeth, and now he's the giant Macbeth because he's a lot taller than him now. But he, same thing as last year. I mean, he came in, he was a top 10 finish last year at Utah for whatever reason. He plays really well at this course. Final round yesterday, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 straight birdies before actually bogeying the final hole, which he aced the day before. I don't know if you caught that one. In round two, he aced that island hole on 18.
I didn't see that.
Yeah,
nope.
It wasn't on coverage or anything, but it's on the on the UDisc stats. He's another one of those guys who it's kind of a roller coaster sometimes. Yeah, I'm looking at his round two score where everyone really struggled, and he, at one point, I just mentioned that he went 7 straight birdies in the final round. In round two, he went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 holes in a row with a bogey or double bogey.
Ooh.
So, but he shot one over again. It was windy. That was crazy there that day, but he's just another one of those ones to keep an eye on who I hope we get to see more of, because he's pure talent. And I just thought that was really nice to kind of see another breakout performance from him. And then my last big thing from the MPO division, and this is kind of, and this isn't to make a mountain out of a molehill or a controversy out of something that shouldn't be controversial, but there was on the Central Coast disc golf coverage at one point in round two. In round two was that windy round. I definitely saw some people online commenting about whether they liked these baskets or not. We won't get into basket commentary today, but combined with that and the conditions, there was at one point where Drew Gibson made a putt and then flipped off the basket as if to say, F you, I made it. Sarah, I don't think anyone even on his card really saw it, or if they did, they didn't really care. Is that something that you think maybe should be called a courtesy on? I feel like yes, and I'm wondering if you agree, if that's something that would be a courtesy violation.
That's so hairy. I don't know.
Like, is it hard for you on the card to want to be like, hey, and call that as a courtesy violation? Is that what you
mean? Of course it is.
I mean, it just doesn't look good, though. Like, if you know you're on video, you shouldn't be doing that. And
that's,
I love
so
Drew,
difficult.
And we've talked about Drew a bunch this year, but this is one of those things where he can get that kind of, he's one of those polarizing players where people love him or they hate him, and it's because of some stuff like that.
He's very emotional.
He is, and I love it. I think it's great, but like,
I'm not standing up for that. I do think it was inappropriate, especially, I mean, you shouldn't be doing it anyway, but like you said, he knows he's being filmed.
And I hate to come off like I'm pearl clutching right now, because that's not me. Like, I'm generally pretty laid back. Like, I'll drop, language when I need to and things like that. But it was more I don't even know if it's not, I don't even mind that he did it. It's more just the awareness of the situation, I think,
exactly.
is where it kind of
yeah.
comes in for me personally.
I'm just trying to think back if I've ever done that before.
Oh, I know I've done it, but I wasn't being filmed.
But I wasn't being filmed at a, you know, big A-tier yeah. super tour event.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't want to take a stance on this.
Oh,
it's
God.
So hard. It's so, I mean, if you've ever been in that situation.
Fine, I'll take a stance.
You kind of
Drew, okay. if you're listening, give it the thumbs down. That's the way to do it. Give it the thumbs down.
Or just stick your hand in your pocket and do it to yourself. Like, just like give the, you know, so no, nobody
give the
can see it.
Shooter McGavin, still like finger guns. Like,
yeah.
Or, exactly. No, maybe not. Maybe not that one either. That's,
no,
that can
probably
be misinterpreted
not that either.
Too. So. Anyway, yeah. again, not to sound like I'm pearl clutching here. It was just one of those things where I would like to see Drew not do that. And I was maybe I'm just a little bitter because I picked Drew for top five and he didn't come in top five for me.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to have a real internal look at my motivations for this.
Wait, while we're talking about somewhat emotional players, can I go back to Lewis Bitney real fast?
Oh, of course.
Okay. I had never seen him play before. I saw his picture, his Disc Golf Pro Tour profile picture, and he's wearing that big, like, camping hat.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy has got a personality. And then he comes on the scene, and he's wearing jeans, which I was trying to figure out the whole time, and I'm sure I could have just Googled this up. Like, what was the temperature? Because some people were wearing shorts.
It was, like, in the 80s, I think. It was, like, 75, okay. 80. I don't think it was scorching.
I was very confused, because some people were wearing, like, some of the women were wearing sleeveless polo shirts and shorts, and others were wearing long sleeves and or jeans. So maybe that's just, does he wear jeans all the time?
As far as I know, yeah, that's okay. His look, like the jeans and the hat and like the bright red Supras, that's his thing. And then lately I've noticed he's also been putting like eye black on his face, like,
yeah,
streaming
someone pointed
it down
that
his
out
face like he's a football player, which I think is great. And I think we need more personality in disc golf. I talked to Lewis. I talked to him the other night, and like, he seems like he's just out there enjoying himself. And that's
is he on full-time tour?
This is his first. He's on his first run of it right now. I think it started right around the West Coast swing. And yeah, he said he's not gonna be home until November. And
awesome.
The thing that the interesting part is, he's 30, and this is his first time going out on tour. So as far as disc golf goes, like, he's kind of a late bloomer.
Yeah.
But I mean, he can hang. I mean, he obviously struggled in round two, but he's not like an unknown commodity. He's gotten to lead cards and been on, you know, video coverage and everything before. So nice to see him. And I also, he's another NorCal guy. So
oh,
I like
gotcha.
To keep, I like to keep an eye on him, but,
yeah, it was just nice to see another fresh face. And he was fun to watch. At one point he missed a putt right on circle one's edge, and he just like fell over on his back like a dead bug.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's like, you know, it's completely necessary, but it was entertaining.
Well, and that's the thing. So maybe this and this circles back to talking about with Drew Gibson, like, there's, we do need personality in disc golf. I think I've always been a big believer that for the sport to kind of break through like everyone wants it to, it's going to be number one because people love it and it's fun to play, but number two, because you have personalities. Every sport has heroes and villains. You know what I mean? And so we do need that stuff. So I don't mean to come off as too stuffy when talking about Drew Gibson and his choice of motions toward the basket. I think
it could have been worse.
I think Drew is one of the young, like, up and coming ones, and he can be, he's very fun sometimes, but he also just kind of gets down on himself too. So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
one of those things. So, anyway, Sarah, let's do this. There was one more thing that we have not talked about yet on the men's side. Eagle McMahon had a misplay penalty from round one that didn't get assessed until after round two, didn't end up really affecting his overall score. Cause he lost by four. If he would have lost by two, we would have been having a whole other conversation. Thank goodness we are not having that. But we're going to take a rules break. Robert Leonard broke it down for us, and we're going to take a look at that. And then we're going to come back and talk about a little hop over the pond. So we'll do that when we return here on PDGA Radio.
Hi. Hi, this is Robert Leonard, PDGA Marshal and Tournament Director for the 2018 PDGA Amateur World Disc Golf Championships driven by Innova, and this is the PDGA Radio Rules Break. This week, we're looking at a situation that occurred at the Utah Open presented by Prodigy Disc on hole 4 during the first round. Eagle McMahon threw a drive and was found to be out of bounds. His group then decided where he was last in bounds, and he moved forward and then completed the round. The next day, it was discovered that Eagle had actually played this hole incorrectly, as the rules did require that any shot that is out of bounds go to the drop zone. So now we have a situation that brings up a pretty common rule, 806.02D, which is simply what you do when you go out of bounds. And there is a clarification that OB options can be limited by the tournament director and with approval from the tour manager. And what that means is that you can say you don't play last place in bounds, you rethrow from your previous lie, or you go to a drop zone or some combination of that. So here we have a situation where a hole was clearly played incorrectly, and Eagle was assessed a two-throw penalty as a misplay, which is defined in 811B and simply says that a misplay has occurred if the player has failed to complete every hole on the course correctly. So now the question is, was this situation handled correctly by the tournament director and by the Disc Golf Pro Tour? And the answer is yes. So this is clearly a case of a misplay. 811B was clearly violated because the rules were pretty clear on what you had to do. But now the question is this was found after the round was over. Can a penalty be assessed at that point? And the answer to that question is yes. 808G Section 1 says that penalty throws may be added or removed up until the director declares the tournament over. So even though this was the next round and even the next day, the tournament director has the right to go back and say, hey, this was a penalty, we're going to readjust this score. But now the next question is, now that Eagle has technically turned in an incorrect scorecard, is he then given another penalty for misadding his scorecard? And Section 2 of 808G is pretty clear that says if the total score is incorrect or improperly recorded, two penalty throws are added. But those penalty throws were not added when the score has been adjusted for other violations determined after the player had turned in an otherwise correct scorecard. So Eagle does have the opportunity to update and correct his scorecard because the penalty has been determined after it's turned in. So there are four things to remember from this pretty unusual situation. Always read your caddy book as a player. If you're unsure, you always have the right to play a provisional. And if you're running a tournament and a goofy situation comes up, 811B is a pretty useful rule. It does allow a TD to assess two-throw penalties for not playing a hole correctly and does solve a lot of the crazy one-off scenarios. And finally, even though a round is complete, a player can still be penalized within the event and the player has the right to update their score. This comes into play not only in the situation that we've discussed, but situations such as provisional, or even if a group improperly interprets a rule and then improperly penalizes a player. So once again, this is Robert Leonard with your PDGA Radio Rules Break, reminding you as always, rules are your
friend. Thank you for that rules break from Robert Leonard, clearing that up for us. It's kind of interesting. We came full circle from last weekend. We were talking about my misplay strokes. So there
just
you
like
go.
We,
another example.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So another thing that we didn't talk about was Sias Elmore's Thumber Ace.
Oh, it was awesome.
It was so cool. And the coolest part was that they just so happened to catch it. What card was he on?
I believe he was on the Chase card.
Okay.
Because, yeah, he was on the Chase card because Jomez was covering it, and that's how you got like the high quality version of it too.
Yep, but we saw it on the live coverage because there was a backup, and
they
were
waiting. Well, that and I think they had also split off one camera because Macbeth was kind of going hamster there as well.
Okay, yeah. So that was pretty cool. There was a Mando, so it's a pretty short hole. I'm not prepared, obviously. I don't remember how far it was.
I believe it was 238. I think it was hole 14, 238 feet. Yeah.
And you saw most of the players throwing a giant Spikeheiser flick forehand, if you're righty, over, and most people were seeming like they were parking it with a lot of ease, and he just like takes his thumber out and just boop, it just hits right next to the basket and skips in. So that was very exciting.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. It was a fun shot, and I don't know if you saw, Sarah, it ended up making number 3 on the SportsCenter top 10.
Oh, awesome.
Pretty cool. So
yeah, it was cool.
Just a little more, and that's a fun one to have, because I think you know, I'm sure there's been a forehand ace on SportsCenter. I can't think of one off the top. Oh, I'm sure Ricky's walk-off one last year probably made SportsCenter, and that was a forehand. But most of them have been backhand, but I don't know that we've seen any, like, overhand-type shots on SportsCenter. So it's cool to just have the variety out there of...
Yeah, definitely.
You know, a different shot. So good stuff from Sias there, and good stuff from Smashbox and Jomez being able to catch that. We got to take a look real quick, Sarah. Something kind of crazy happened this weekend over in Europe, and this is a good transition into the next couple events we're going to talk about. They had the Sula Open over in Europe, and Simon Lazat was playing there. He did not win. Actually, Greg Barsby won this one. Shout out to Barsby. This was in Finland, I believe. I need to kind of brush up again and double check, but I think that's where it was. And Simon Lazat in the second round shot the lowest rated round of his career, an 884 rated 16 over par round. He went 16 over par, shot an 80. And looking at that, you can go on Disc Golf Metrics, is where they had the hole by hole scoring. It gets a little bit worse for our buddy Simon, who we have nothing but love for, and he will acknowledge that this was a struggle for him. He at one point carded a 13 on a 479 foot par 4. Was kind of an island hole with a big football field OB. And then he carded a 12 on an 826 foot par 5.
Oh, that's rough.
Very rough. So rough that I was like, wow, I really hope Simon's not hurt or something. And you know, the other one that I'm looking up the whole the distances right now. I lost it. I was trying to figure out if the par 5 was an island hole. No, it's not, but it's really tight lines. OB left and right. Anyway, I reached out to Simon because I was like, hey, I saw, you know, I'm not trying to be rude. Saw the round. Just want to make sure, like, you're not hurt. And he's like, no. Yeah. He said he was not hurt, which is good. Basically, he just kind of was over it, got frustrated, and was ending up trying different things, he said. So I'll read you exactly what he said. He said, okay. Not hurt. I took a 12 and 13 that round, basically not caring and trying stupid stuff over and over. And then he said, I'll be better in Czech Republic, with a big smiley emoji, which, yes, that was the... He also confirmed that was the lowest rated round of his life. So, on the plus side, definitely not going to make his player rating. That one's going to be way too many...
For sure.
Way too many standard deviations off. So, yeah. I love that Simon was willing to, like, answer those questions and own up to it. Just a weird... Weird occurrence for him over there at the Sula Open. And so, like we said, a few events going on in Europe now. We're kind of in this transitional point of the season where some people are starting to head over across the pond for a run of European events. Oh, and I apologize. The Sula Open was in Norway, not Finland. That was my bad. So we're getting some, you know, Scandinavian European events, which is great because in a few weeks we have the Kanapiise Open. It's the European PDGA major this year. And this weekend, Sarah, is one we're going to look at and make some picks for, is the Latitude 64 Tuny, sponsored by Dynamic Discs. Now, it looks like it's called Tiny, but everyone I've talked to has pronounced it Tuny. This is over in Sipu, Finland. And what they're kind of aiming for with this, it looks like, is kind of like the European version of the Glass Blown Open. There are 753 players. They've got 11 days worth of events, like four different courses, barbecues, flex start C tiers, like all that kind of stuff that you kind of expect. Oh, they got bungee jumping.
Oh my gosh.
They don't have that at the Glass Blown Open. Better get on that Glass Blown Open, folks. I will not do it.
I will not do it either. No, I was you don't. That's
not,
unnecessary.
No,
for me.
I'm not an adrenaline junkie.
I would enjoy watching other people do it.
Exactly.
Take some pictures.
And then, so. Kind of, it just sounds like another one of those big events, and that so it doesn't surprise me that Latitude 64 and Dynamic Discs are sponsoring this thing because it just sounds like their kind of thing. But there's a 60 player open division and a 17 player open women's division, so we are actually going to make our selections for that one. Sarah, you, after last week, I did the math, you are still up by 21 points. I think I maybe shaved like 2 points off of your margin this week. Chipping away. You got the points, the full points with Ricky winning, but I got the full points with Katrina winning. And then, you know,
I didn't get anything for Yulabari.
I didn't get anything for top five men's.
For Drew,
we both got top five women's. And then, you know, but so anyway, I think I beat you by two for the week. So you're up 212 to 191. And you get to pick first for the Toonie. And then we are also going to make picks for the Minnesota Majestic, which is a big A tier here in the States. So,
yeah.
Sarah, who do you got for the Toonie this weekend?
I'm going none other than Richard Wysocki.
Wow, you're really going against the grain with that one.
Because duh.
All right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to see your because duh, and I'm going to raise you a he's got to fly a really long way over there, and maybe he's going to be jet lagged. You didn't think about that, did you?
Yeah, but the top four out of five guys are all from the U.S. and are flying over there, too.
But you know who's from the U.S. and is already over there and just won this week? Mr. Gregory Barsby, who freaking loves Scandinavia. He plays so well over there. I think he goes over there and he listens to black metal the whole time and just gets in his groove. So yeah. I'm going to take Barsby.
All right.
On the women's side, I know you're going to pick Paige Pierce because duh.
Right? Because duh. Yep.
And I'm going to go against my own logic on the men's side and be super consistent and take Katrina Allen, who is traveling over there right now and might be jet lagged.
She's on a roll, though.
She is.
Never know.
She is, yeah. So I'm just excited. This one is going to be covered on UDisc Live, so you can keep an eye out for scoring there this weekend. I don't know if there's video coverage. I bet there will be some. I don't know that it's going to be like next day or anything like that.
Okay.
But I'm sure we'll get something out of it because it seems like a pretty big event. And you've got some big names there. Other players who will be in attendance include Seppo Paju, Vanessa Van Dyken, Kristen Tatar. I'm surprised Evelina Salonen is not there. She just won the Sula Open, but she's not playing on the women's side. On the men's side, you've got also Devin Owens, Philo Brathwaite, Leo Pirinen, a lot of other really strong European players.
Is KJ playing? I don't even see KJ's.
No, he was up in Norway this week too. I don't know. Huh. Maybe he had to get back to work.
Maybe.
Or maybe they're all... I would imagine this is probably a similar thing where some of the European players are maybe holding off for Konopiste in a couple weeks.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe they're like the weekend warriors of Europe, kind of like you are here. They got to choose their spots.
Yeah, maybe.
That's what I would guess. So, but hopefully we get to see some KJ on there. And then, so it's interesting. We've got people... It's going to kind of, with this whole European swing, it's kind of impacting some of the attendance at the next couple Disc Golf Pro Tour events. So the next one is in a couple weeks. It's the Great Lakes Open. Obviously, Ricky's not going to be there. Anyone who's over in Europe already, Paige and Katrina, aren't going to be there. So the field for the Great Lakes Open is going to be interesting. I think out of the whole Eagle Paul Ricky trifecta, the only one who's going to be there is Paul McBeth. Because Eagle McMahon, I think, is going to do some promotional things over in Europe before Konopiste. So that'll be interesting to watch and see how the field is impacted there. But it's still it's still sold out, I think. There's still 143, 144 players to go take on the toboggan. But we'll talk about that more next week. Sarah, the other event going on this weekend that we've got to talk about is the Minnesota Majestic.
Yeah.
And you have a little experience with some of these courses, it sounds like, yeah?
Yeah, so I played 2014 Am Worlds up there. Unfortunately, I did not get to play the premier course in the area, which is Blue Ribbon Pines. But just looking at pictures and hearing some of the feedback,
it looks so great.
Gorgeous, yeah. The one course that is in play that I have played before is Kapoja Park.
Okay.
It's pretty wooded. There's some open holes. There's a fair amount of elevation change. There's a good mix of long and short holes. That's all I got.
Okay. No, well,
there are a lot of courses in play. And,
there's so many courses.
I can remember one specific hole that you're shooting out of a wooded tunnel and you're shooting parallel to the road that you come in on. So there's some OB over there. Then you're throwing into some big boulders where the the basket sit. So it's kind of a pretty signature hole.
Gotcha. But,
yeah. I remember really liking it. So
the other course that they're playing, I think, for the Majestic is Bethel University, which is a newer one, I believe, up there. Noah Meinsma, who listeners may remember from his breakout performance at the Masters Cup, he gives that one the seal of approval. I talked to him about it real quick, and he was a fan. So pretty interesting field here. AJ Risley's there. He skipped Utah and just went up to Minnesota. You've got Kale Laviska, James Proctor, Alex Geisinger, Double G, Adam Hammes, who was like the surprise story of Pro Worlds last year, kind of came out of nowhere to be on lead card the final day after being up all night sick the night before. You know, so there's some strong contenders over on the men's side, and on the women's side, you've got Sarah Hokum, Jessica Weiss, Paige Spierkes, Holly Finley. So, I mean, there's definitely going to be some competition, I think, at this one, Sarah.
Agreed.
So
and I get to pick first on this one as well, don't I?
No, you don't.
No, I don't. Oh,
I get to pick first on this one because that just wouldn't be fair.
Darn you. To be fair. Totally forgot.
So I'm going to take Kale Laviska because it's hard. Like, and you and I were talking off air trying to decide. I was going back and forth between Kale and Alex Geisinger because they are both the Minnesota guys. But yeah. It's hard because they're both the Minnesota guys now, and they don't hit tour as much. They're staying home, so it's hard to kind of get a gauge unless you're up in Minnesota or talking to them all the time how they're really playing. So, you know, I'm going to go with Kale. It's home courses. He's coming in as the defending champion. He's the highest-rated player. It just makes sense from a numbers game, but I wouldn't be surprised to see someone like Geisinger do it because he's a stud, man. He is one of those guys who he is just fun to watch throw, just pure power.
Yeah, super smooth.
Yeah, and speaking of pure power, I have a feeling you're going with someone with pure power for your pick on the men's side.
I am. I'm going Double G.
Yep.
But I'm not sure. I mean, he's proven that he can play on all different types of courses, but as far as Kapoja and Blue Ribbon Pines goes, they're pretty wooded. Kapoja isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Kapoja is not a bomber course by any means. So if he can get his putting together, I think he's got a chance.
I don't dislike that pick. My pick on the women's side is going to be Sarah Hokum because, again, she's just been playing really solid the whole year. You know, she comes in after a couple weeks of not being on a larger stage. And I think sometimes that's good for you. So I think with Woods and her propensity for strong lines, I like her for this event.
Yeah. I'm going Jessica Weiss. She's the second highest rated player. She played super well this past weekend. This whole season, she's been really solid. So I'm going to go with her.
All right. Well, we will check back in next week and see how those did. And then, Sarah, we've got we didn't do hot rounds. We forgot to do the hot rounds, didn't we?
Well, let's do it.
Let's do it real quick. Okay, well, we discussed most of the hot rounds already. Ricky Wysocki, really hot. Ian McMahon and Paul McBeth, also hot. Anthony Borella's third round, also very hot. 1070 at the Utah Open. That was the third hottest round of the weekend. Kevin Jones, my boy, coming in with the fourth hottest rated round of the weekend. A 1061 to move up into an eighth place tie at the Utah Open. And then we had someone not at the Utah Open. This is from Brent Kuntz. He shot a 1060 rated second round at the 33rd annual Three Rivers Open. And he took first place there. So congrats to Brent. And then Sarah, what do we got on the women's side?
So only one of our hot rounds was from the Utah Open, surprisingly.
That's cool.
Yeah, so the first hottest round was Evelina Sullinen, and she shot a 990 first round. She took the win at the Sula Open, so that's pretty scorching. Congratulations to her. She's really good.
She can putt.
Really?
Like her putting is
I've never played with her.
Strong. Yeah, she can putt well.
Cool. And then speaking of Sarah Hokum, she shot the second hottest rated round at the summer solstice in Wells Gray, and she was hanging out in British Columbia for a little longer. It was in Clearwater, BC, and she shot a 985 second round, and she finished in first place. So congratulations to her.
Nice.
Nicole Bradley had the third hottest round with a 984. She played King of the Lake, presented by DGA, in South Lake, Tahoe.
Yes.
Yeah. And That was her third round, and she finished first.
I think that one, I think I saw she posted on Facebook, that one was at Bijou, which is a fun, super fun course up on South Shore.
Nice. And then the fourth highest rated round was at the Sula Open. Kristen, you've got to say her last name for me. Tatar. Okay. Yeah. She shot a 976 her second round, and she finished second behind Evelina. And then our only hot round from the Utah Open was Paige Bjerkus. She shot a 973 her second round and was in a tie for second.
How crazy is that that Katrina Allen won and she didn't even have the hot round for the weekend?
Well, that was her whole plan.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think it just goes to show that you can win by just playing around your rating, playing consistently. Yeah. And that's the one other thing. Like, I was going back and doing some math. Her player rating has dropped. I don't know if you noticed, Sarah. She's rated 949 right now. That's the lowest it's been in 6 years.
Wasn't she like nine in the 970s or just below 970s?
She's been in the 970s before, not for some time, but she's usually a solid like 965, somewhere in there. And so like we're not being overblown when we say that she had some struggles, and she'll admit that she's had struggles. So her over the last three events where she has won, she's averaged just about 963, which is much closer to how she's been playing over the last few years. So
yeah,
good to see her kind of getting back into the swing of things. So
yeah,
Sarah, I think that's it for today.
Well, I want to put one more plug for the PDGA Radio Challenge.
I'm gonna go do it this week.
You better.
I'm going.
We did it all. We played two rounds at Cedar Hill Disc Golf Course outside of Nashville. I don't know how long it took us. We didn't film it or anything, but we played two back-to-back running rounds.
Oh wow!
On Saturday morning, it probably took us like 25 to 30 minutes around. But my awesome partner Sean shot 10 under and 11 under, and this is the hardest course. This is arguably the hardest course, maybe the second hardest course in Nashville. And he said it was the best he has ever shot running round or regular round with a full bag. And we just take one disc with us.
Does he run like, does his running look like his throwing in that it's like the most effortless thing on the planet?
Oh yeah. It's so,
Those of you who are listening to the show, we're talking about Sean Sinclair, who used to be on tour all the time and is just generally a good dude and a stud of a disc golfer. And it literally looks like he's just doing nothing when he throws. It's so natural and effortless. It's kind of annoying, Sarah.
He said that, that the running joke on tour used to be that like, so people would make fun of his form and they would just throw and then like curl up and fall asleep on the tee pad.
Yep. it looks so easy and you're just like, how are you doing that? It's pretty mystifying. So it wouldn't surprise me if he probably looks as effortless while he runs.
It does. So speaking of that, we have just a week left, not even a week left in the month of June, and we will be wrapping up our first PDGA Radio Challenge, which is running a round of disc golf or cardio golf, speed golf, whatever you want to call it, and take a picture. You can take a selfie. You can take a video. I'm looking at some of the entries on Instagram right now, and people have taken screenshots of their scorecards or their Fitbit data, that kind of stuff. So
perfect.
Yeah. So just run your round, take a picture to prove it, and put it on Instagram, and we will choose a winner at the end of the month to win a sweet prize that we have not chosen yet.
Yes, that's hashtag PDGA Radio Challenge. And then the other small plug I want to give is later this week, maybe early next week, we are going to have a special kind of standalone PDGA Radio episode with interviews with the six PDGA Board of Directors candidates. So you can learn more about them and kind of their background and their general philosophies and everything. So keep an eye and ear out for that. It will be coming soon.
Cool.
So, all right. So, Sarah, we've got plenty going on. Until then, we are going to wrap it up, I think. So if you have any feedback, as always, please let us know, radio@pdga.com. And we'll be back next week to talk Great Lakes Open. We'll wrap up a little bit from Europe. And we're going to have to come up with another radio challenge, I guess.
Yeah.
We better work
on that. Maybe it should be like Thumber Aces.
Oh, Or summer ace attempts, at least.
Summer ace attempts. We'll think of something. We'll
throw out your shoulder. The throw out your shoulder PDGA radio challenge.
This is not. Yeah, I will not be doing this challenge. The running one, fine. Ace thumbers, not up my alley.
Yeah, maybe not. We'll work on that one, and we will get back to everyone next week. So until then, that was Sarah Lamerson. I'm Steve Hill. Thanks for joining us on PDGA Radio, and we will catch you next time.